Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, November 7. Every day here in town, Summit, New Jersey, I see clear evidence of the problem the U.S. economy faces. Small business is dead. I think we are now up to 25 businesses that have closed in a business district that is of decent size, befitting a prosperous town of some 20,000. Corporate America is hanging in there with profits respectable given efforts to squeeze every last bit of productivity out of their workers. But otherwise, the bodies are piling up. As Friday's employment report for October revealed, the official unemployment rate soared to 10.2%, the highest since 1983, while the unofficial one is in the 17 to 18% range. Remember the days when U.S. unemployment rates were in the 5% range and we'd scoff at Europe's 9 to 10% ones? Well, the latest rate for the Eurozone is 9.7%, awful but better than ours. I'm glad Warren Buffett, through the buying up of all the Burlington Northern shares he didn't already own, $26 billion worth, said he was making an all-in wager on the economic future of the United States, because I sure as hell wouldn't. By now, every two-year-old in America should know two maxims of investing. The market is a discounting mechanism, and employment is a lagging indicator. Making my forecast for 2009, I correctly said the major averages would finish up 20 to 30% because sentiment would trump fundamentals, and that has indeed been the case. We hit my targets a few weeks ago, but I've refused to give a forecast for next year because of all the uncertainty that remains, particularly on the geopolitical front. Plus, I want to see where the equity averages finish up 2009 before opining on 2010. The two very much go hand in hand. Before I turn to the elephant in the room, however, a few words on the past week. The economic data was actually much improved, especially compared to the past few weeks, as a reading on construction spending for September was solidly positive, when a negative number was expected. September factory orders were slightly better than expected and solidly positive. And an October reading on manufacturing, the ISM, hit 55.7, better than the forecast 53.0, and far above the 50 dividing line between growth and contraction. The 55.7 was the best since April 2006. And a figure on the housing front, September pending home sales came in better than expected as well, up 6.1%. All very good. Cisco Systems then issued a positive earnings report that contained an optimistic view of current conditions on into 2010, and that too was good. Mr. Buffett's move was helpful as well. Then the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee met, and in holding the line on interest rates at zero, thus once again screwing savers, but aiding the banks in their ongoing effort to earn their way out of their problems, read underperforming assets that sit on their balance sheets like a pile of mire that no one wants to clean up, offered that it will continue to promote economic activity by keeping rates exceptionally low for an extended period, adding that household spending, the consumer being 70% of the economy, will remain, quote, constrained by ongoing job losses, sluggish income growth, lower housing wealth, and tight credit, close quote. No surprises, for sure, as it comes down to two key items, wages and housing. Wages are going nowhere, except in some cases down, and as much as I'm proud I may have picked the housing bottom when in 2008 I said we'd hit a floor in the April-May timeframe of 2009, I also hasten to add, about 75 times, that once we bottomed we'd sit there for a long spell. Whether or not the bottom's actually hit, and I will not argue with those who say there's another leg down due to all the foreclosures that continue to pile up, particularly as the banks face facts, one thing is for sure. Unless you tell me we're about to enter an inflationary period, unless you tell me we're about to enter an inflationary spiral, a la the 1970s and early 80s, you can forget any rally in home prices. Speaking of inflation, with all due respect, a term that is code for I think those on the other side are morons, if you've grown up understanding that labor is a chief component of the vast majority of products that we use, how the heck can you build a case for inflation, especially when you all know capacity utilization remains in the dumper? Check this out from a story by Laura Slattery of the Irish Times, November 5th. Living standards in Ireland are likely to remain permanently lower, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, said yesterday in a new report in Ireland. Lower wages are necessary to restore stability to the economy, the organization said, while consideration should be given to reducing the minimum wage over time. Reducing, a concept that we are beginning to see applied in a few states here. Continuing, job seekers' benefit and assistance payments should also be cut in line with falling prices, according to the OECD's survey of the economy. the OECD, to which 30 of the world's developed economies belong, puts forward its views of how the Irish economy may be restored to long-term sustainable growth after a period of unusually large economic imbalances. Well, I've long documented the plight of the Irish after traveling there 17 times in the past 20 years, and many of their problems are not dissimilar to what we've seen in the United States, a tremendous real estate bubble being first and foremost, and a crushing of the wealth effect. Want more proof, inflation hawks? Francis Williams, Financial Times, November 3rd. The tentative global economic recovery now underway is threatened by stagnant or falling wages in many countries that will limit household spending, the International Labor Organization warned on Tuesday. In its latest global wages report, the UN agency says growth in real wages, adjusted for inflation, slowed sharply in 2008, and the picture is likely to get worse in 2009. The continued deterioration of real wages worldwide raises serious questions about the true extent of an economic recovery, especially if government rescue packages are phased out too early. Growth in real monthly wages slowed from 4.3% in 2007 to 1.4% in 2008 among the 53 countries for which recent data were available. But real wages stagnated or declined in more than a quarter of those countries, including some of the world's biggest economies such as the U.S., Germany, Japan, and the U.K. Well, so with the above in mind, a brief segue into gold, which soared above 1,100 this week, thanks to the Fed's pronouncement it would keep rates at zero forever, because the economy wasn't about to come roaring back, thus the dollar wasn't a screaming buy, and India's central bank's purchase of 200 metric tons of the stuff, presaging similar moves by other central banks down the road, including China with its massive reserves. If those are your reasons for buying gold, fine. I'm not as upbeat on America's future as Warren Buffett. While other countries are becoming bigger players on the global stage versus, say, the 1950s when America was like 70% of the global economy, so diversification of assets, if you're a central bank, only makes sense. Just understand that over the next 5 years, a poll of institutional investors for Barron's shows 92% still believing the dollar will remain the world's reserve currency, as do I. For 10 years, though, the percentage plummets to 57%. But if you're buying gold as an inflation hedge, as Dick Vitale would say, are you kidding me? It's not. Never has been. Never will. Which in a roundabout way brings me to Iran. Surprisingly, no one this week was talking about buying gold for geopolitical reasons, which would be a good one. In fact, the situation with Iran got immeasurably worse again this week, but it wasn't on anyone's lips. I caught Bill O'Reilly one night, and he and Karl Rove brought it up, but only in the context of President Obama levying harsher sanctions, not one word about Israel, which is the real story. Before I continue, though, to finish on the gold topic, one word of advice. Should all hell break loose, as I think could be the case, and if you tell me that there is a direct correlation between gold and the dollar, as there basically has been, then just be forewarned that if Israel attacks Iran, what will happen to the dollar? It will soar. Does the direct correlation then continue with gold, or does the safe haven aspect of the shiny metal overcome the dollar aspect? I don't know that one person I have heard or read has ever brought this up. And remember, regarding the price of oil, just to digress, you heard it here first a while ago. Yes, it would spike immediately to 130 or higher, but just as quickly, Saudi Arabia will announce they're flooding the markets with the 4 million barrels in excess capacity that they currently have. The Saudis know as much as anyone that very much above the current $80 level, the global economic recovery is in jeopardy, and a return to new highs would send us spiraling into depression. Continuing. So this week, Iran was convulsed again by protest on the day celebrating the 30th anniversary of the takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. Only whereas in past years on this date, the protests were one-sided, like down with America, this time the courageous opposition leaders Mousavi and Kurobi led anti-government protests that were beaten back by the increasingly scary, if that was even possible, Revolutionary Guards and their besieged paramilitary force. So what is the Obama administration doing? Dealing with an oppressive regime and with a president who won a clearly fraudulent election, while refusing to support the heroic opposition because we don't want to jeopardize talks on the nuclear weapons front? This is insane. As the Wall Street Journal editorialized, the Obama people or policy is simply one of total appeasement, a full betrayal of the Iranian people. It makes you want to scream. I've held a little secret from you all the past few years. Remember when I suddenly ended up in Morocco in 2007? It was because the bastard Iranians turned down my visa at the very last moment, literally, but with non-refundable tickets to and from Paris, I switched plans on the dime. As sharp as the Iranians are when it comes to playing their stall games, however, they also contain an idiot gene. And so it was that this week Iran supplied Israel with critical evidence at the worst possible time in the form of the seizure of a ship from Iran bound for Syria that was loaded with tons of weapons, mostly missiles, that in turn would be turned over to Hezbollah. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu was thus able to say, Iran is sending these weapons to terror organizations to harm Israeli cities and kill its citizens. The time has come for the international community to exert real pressure on Iran to stop this criminal activity and to support Israel when it defends itself against these terrorists and their patrons. Israeli President Shimon Peres said that while Iran and Syria, of course, issued denials, the world is aware of the gap between what Syria and Iran say and how they actually act. This is also but the tip of the iceberg, as any follower of the arms buildup in Lebanon and Gaza knows. Speaking of Gaza, Israeli intelligence this week said Hamas was testing missiles with a range that can strike deep into Tel Aviv. Israel had an important backer this week when German Chancellor Angela Merkel addressed a joint session of Congress on Tuesday, saying in part, an Iranian president who denies the Holocaust, threatens Israel, and does not recognize its right to exist cannot be allowed to possess nuclear weapons. The security of Israel is not negotiable. Whoever threatens Israel threatens us. So what of the Iranians this week, aside from beating up protesters? They refused to officially respond to the UN proposal they initially signed off on, and part of the reason is there are significant internal divisions within the Iranian leadership, which the White House should be exploiting. For starters, many in Parliament hate President Ahmadinejad, and from my reading of local press there, there's a big battle over who's to control what they call the excess oil revenues. Parliament wants to, while Ahmadinejad and said his cabinet should. This is not a small item. You also have a situation where many in Iran don't want Ahmadinejad to be able to claim any successes on the negotiation front. Thus the reason for the delay in a response to the plan for shipping out Iran's uranium to be enriched by Russia and France for medical use. Iran also says it wants to change the original proposal as well. But I saw the following in the Khalij Times, which supplies a lot of clues as to where we're headed. Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei lashed out at the United States on Tuesday, saying Tehran will reject any talks backed by its arch foe because Washington is not to be trusted. Khamenei's salvo raised the possibility that a Washington-backed nuclear fuel deal for a Tehran research reactor may be derailed, despite world powers turning up the heat on Iran to accept the UN-brokered offer. He said, every time they have a smile on their face, they are hiding a dagger behind their back. Iran will not be fooled by the superficial conciliatory tone of the United States. Khamenei also said, in the past 8 months, what we've seen from Washington is contradictory to what they say. They are telling us to negotiate, but alongside the negotiation, there is a threat that if the negotiation does not bear the desired results, then we will do this and we will do that. We do not want any negotiation, the result of which is predetermined by the United States, he said, adding that Tehran will always pursue its scientific and technological rights and freedom. So what more does the White House need to know? I have no problem with President Obama having given negotiations a shot for one reason, to show the world we went the extra mile and expose the Iranians for the terrorist frauds they are once and for all. But now is the time for action, harsher sanctions immediately. If Russia and China won't go along, then Obama has to lead. That's what we're paying the guy for, after all, and get Britain, France, and Germany on board. The tougher we make life for the average Iranian, the better chance we have of the people completing the revolution that is simmering today. But of course, I really don't think this is what Obama will do, which is why I believe Israel will attack sooner than later. And you saw that new report on a topic I broached long ago, that Iran may already have finished its research on the weaponization element for its soon-to-come nukes. I also got a kick out of the International Atomic Energy Agency and their inspection at the One Secret Comb facility. The preliminary findings, as put forward by departing IAEA Chief Mohammed El-Baradei, are that Comb is merely a backup facility in case Natanz was destroyed. El-Baradei, the slimy snake, must have been beaming, while your editor smugly concludes, dear reader, what have I been telling you the past few months? This isn't about Israel's ability to attack 130 different sites to set back Iran's program, as some offer. It's about Natanz. Israel will take out Natanz. For this reason, I said last week that now is not the time to be committing fresh capital to the stock market. It is a time for caution. I have been careful to avoid saying, however, that I'm issuing an outright sell. I may yet do that. Have a good week. I'll be back with you Saturday, November 14th.